Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Hey, what's going on? It's Metal Shop doing an at-home interview right now with Will Putney. His band End just released Splinters from an Ever-Changing Face, available now on Closed Casket. He's a musician for Fit for an Autopsy, also a producer, worked on, you know, so many albums we've played on Metal Shop: After the Burial, Knocked Loose, Stray from the Path, Harm's Way, Vain, Winds of Plague, dozens and dozens more. You know, I guess he's doing the whole stay home, stay safe thing as well. But I think at home he has his own studio. Is that right?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, man.
You're welcome.
So, I've been building out a studio spot. We just moved earlier in the year, and I'm in the process of getting my new home base set up. But I do have a control room, and I'm getting some work done here, so can't complain.
This past weekend, you did a 2-day marathon stream. On your Twitch. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it and like, how did it go, and what was the idea for it, and I guess how tired were you at the end?
Yeah, sure. So it took a bit of time and effort to put together, but we did, we did a 2-day event called We Can Do Better, where the collection of artists and managers, labels that I had on as guest speakers, kind of people from all different walks of life, you know, different upbringings, different tax packets. And we just kind of got into what's going on the ground with some of the protests. Mm-hmm. We got into some more serious conversations, addressed some issues about how to tackle things, you know, how to combat racism within your family, like how white people should potentially address themselves, how, you know, we got a lot of insight into Black community and people of color and musicians who have shared some struggles. And, you know, it was about 16 hours of interviews and conversations over 2 days. And it's super insightful. Yeah. Everybody kind of learned a ton from each other. All this was kind of pulled together with a big charity raffle with over 100 artists from the hardcore metal world participating. And yeah, we raised a ton of money. I think we hit $60,000 by the end of it. And it was an awesome event. It's going around, but it's still online. We rebroadcasted it, so if anybody wants to check it out, you can search for me, Will Putney, or the We Can Do Better event, or it's still up on soundrink.live right now. So, but it was a awesome learning experience, and really happy that, really proud of my community for everybody coming on and participating.
I mean, you had Ice-T on there, right?
I did. I had Ice-T on there. Yeah.
that's pretty huge. So, I mean, all kinds of different musicians, and then motherfucking Ice-T. So that's a get there. So very awesome. Okay, so your album, The End Record, which is kind of highly anticipated and awesome record, by the way. Splinters from an Ever-Changing Face. It was released last week, but as a lot of protests were going on, you guys decided to put out a statement essentially saying, like, hey, it's out there, but we're not going to do, like, a hard sell on it right now. What made you guys decide to kind of take this step back, take kind of the back seat from the hard promotion mode and just kind of go, hey, check it out if you want to? What made you guys take that move?
Well, I think, you know, there's just a lot of, you know, the members of End are pretty active with what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we were planning this event and my guys are out at protests. Everyone's doing their own sort of nonprofit stuff. And the climate of like promoting a band just didn't feel great to anybody, you know?
Yeah.
We felt like we would get in the way of, there's a lot of dialogue on social media, more than I've maybe ever seen in my life, about the current events, updates of what was going on, news feeds, like, and everyone was trying to kind of get a grip on the situation in America. And we didn't feel good about like getting away of any of that stuff or trying to sell our own records and in this time. So we just decided to just kind of be quiet about it for a second.
Yeah.
We did announce that the record was out because we had just had to. But we just donated, instead of self-promoting, we just said, if you buy anything, you know, this is like through release weekend, we'll just donate all the money. So we kind of turned it into more of a charitable event than, you know, like a cash grab for us at the moment. But yeah, I mean, the label felt the same way. I know Closed Casket also very active and sort of working with a lot of nonprofit stuff right now. And they're pushing out tons of nonprofit shirts and records. They just released a record on Friday from a band called Regional Justice Center called KKK Tattoo, which is a really interesting story and a really well-written song. And they're just donating all that. So he's shipping all that stuff. And we were just so busy with this. We all agreed, like, maybe let's just get out of the way for a second here, you know. But, totally. You know, the record's out. Feedback's good. People found it. I think, you know, we're lucky that we had enough fans that followed us. So when the record was initially announced, it still did well. And we were still able to, like, you know, people found it on their own anyway, which was cool. But we all felt a lot better kind of getting out of the way for this week, you know.
No, I hear that. And you have a good point. I mean, with no real distractions out there, no baseball, no football, no basketball, it's all eyes are on that. And the last thing you would want to do is kind of just throw something that'll dilute the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of where we landed, and we all just didn't feel great about taking away from what was going on. I mean, if maybe one of the first times in a while we were starting to see actual progress in America.
Totally.
And I was like, let's just lean into that and be supportive of the community and the Black Lives Matter movement, and let's not try to sell hardcore records for this week. You know?
Yeah. Well, okay, so I kind of have a follow-up question about that. So, like, some artists, I guess, maybe don't feel comfortable making a statement, using their platform to make a statement, and then others feel maybe it's necessary or important to do so. Where do you fall in line with that?
I think it's very necessary now. It should have been necessary in the past, you know. And, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but at least I've always tried to tie in some nonprofit work or use the bands as platforms to kind of deliver, you know, socially aware messages throughout the years. And I could understand not everybody's is a political guy. Not everybody digs deep into these social issues or is, you know, extremely well articulate or educated in, you know, understanding what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm not an expert either, you know, but I know, there's enough kids that follow the bands and the music that I make and stuff where, you know, I can at least find a way to do my part at the moment. And I think everybody needs to realize that right now also moving forward, it's like, there's no more time to just sit around and be complacent and silent. And I'm happy to see it. I mean, I do see plenty of bands that normally kind of sit back and are quiet when things go bad in the world because their bands aren't really motivated to really dig into social issues. Maybe they write about different stuff or whatever, but I am seeing a lot more musicians kind of take the reins and figure out ways to, you know, join a movement and create positive change.
Yeah.
But at this point, people are starting to notice that people are quiet, you know, and I think it's going to be reflective. I think long-term, people aren't going to forget who just kind of sat by while everybody else, you know, took up arms for this cause. So
totally,
you know, I can't say for me, it just goes against, you know, who I am. I was a kid who grew up, you know, I'm a Rage Against the Machine kid. You know,
yeah.
I always respected using your platforms to deliver messages, and the music that I like gravitates towards that also, because if you're not saying anything important, lyrics don't really do much for me, you know, anymore in my life. So, yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting time.
I mean, and also, like, just to kind of wrap that all up, is we're also still in the middle of a pandemic, and that's been crazy too. How has the last few months been for you since March? You know, have you had albums to work on? Are you, you know, you said that you're kind of building out your studio. How have you been staying busy? And I guess more importantly, how have you been staying safe and sane?
Yeah, I was traveling in February and March, in the beginning of March, doing in Buffalo, a recording in a band called Every Time I Die. And when I got home,
that's awesome.
this all kind of hit over here. I still had a record plan, so we actually quarantined myself with a band at my studio.
Whoa.
And through April, basically, and made a record. And I just kind of lived there with the band to get it done. Because we didn't know what was going to happen. Now I have the hindsight, but I didn't know how long-term of an issue this was actually going to be in our area, you know?
Yeah.
New Jersey's, you know, our studio's only 5 miles out of New York City, so.
Mm.
And that was like ground zero for a lot of this stuff. And it was, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen, but like, well, we can all just quarantine ourselves here for a month, so we might as well go for it. And that's what we did.
Totally.
And now I'm home. And I've canceled a bunch of, you know, we've shifted our schedule. I moved a bunch of records to the fall. And now I'm kind of just trying to get the studio done in downtime now. But it's cool because it's freed up a lot of time to work on some of this nonprofit stuff right now, which I think is important. And luckily, I'm still able to sustain myself with some mixing and, mm-hmm. you know, work from home. So it didn't go as bad for me as I'm sure it is for a lot of small business owners out there right now.
Cause yeah.
luckily I'm not retail based, or I don't have to worry about people coming into my restaurant, or, you know, so I definitely feel for, I know a lot of my friends and a lot of small business owners are probably, you know, heavily impacted by what's happening right now. So it's a shame, but yeah, I'm fortunate, you know, can't really complain about any of that.
Cool, man. Well, I'm glad that you're still staying busy amidst the chaos. Again, the album is called Splinters from an Ever-Changing Face, available now on Closed Casket. You can pick it up, support the band. I'm curious about the backstory of the band, because obviously Fit for an Autopsy, you guys are like a highly successful, you know, typically during a normal time, you'd be a touring machine. You know, did End kind of start as a side project, or how did the project kind of get started? Why don't you give me like kind of the, you know, Cliff Note version of the origin story?
Sure. I mean, I was kind of doing a metal band, and my buddy Brendan, who's the singer of End, was in another band called Counterparts. And
yeah,
we always kind of, we had like a shared interest and passion for the style of music that End plays, but we weren't really getting that outlet with our project.
Uh-huh.
And just over the years, I've worked with a bunch of artists who were, you know, in a similar position where when I thought about doing, and I realized like, oh, these guys are either just doing studio work now, or they're not in touring bands and stuff. So the idea came up to be like, hey, I know a bunch of guys who like this style of music who would probably be down to do a band. And I kind of just made a few phone calls and put together a little group of my friends who I knew would like bring a lot to the table for a project like this. Always had interest in doing a band like this, but never really, you know, had a chance to execute it. And, you know, that's really what it was just born out of. It's all kind of more seasoned guys who knew this genre really well, who wanted to, always had an itch to write these kind of songs. So that it initially started just like that, you know.
You Frankensteined a metalcore beast.
Yeah, more or less.
I like it, dude. That's awesome, dude. Kind of like picking in people from all the, you know, albums you've probably worked on. You're like, hey, this would go well. And then you come up with a super group, and that's fucking rad, man. You remember that VH1 show that had like Sebastian Bach and Scott Ian from Anthrax on it? And they all had to create this like really corny band. That's like the bad version of what you did.
Yeah, on a smaller scale. I'm glad. I think the supergroup term is weird because.
Well, I said it. You probably wouldn't feel comfortable saying it. I'll say it, but.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's a genre that is defined by not being rock stars.
For sure, and for sure.
Yeah, it's just due to I know love this music who would kick ass, you know, making it, and that's where it really came from. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm just happy that people are into it, and then we didn't get lumped in with like side project stigma or anything like that.
Yeah.
And now I think with the Spalling, it's sort of got its own lane and identity, and it feels a little more separate from our other work and projects than it was when the band started. You know, when we first did this, that's all people wanted to talk about. And now it seems like people don't even, now people are finding the band and the album who don't even know about what else we do, you know, which I think is cool.
How long did you work on the album from start to finish? Like, how long did it take to get this done?
We probably spent about 3 weeks to a month working on it.
Okay.
I don't know the exact time, but we've had the record done for a long time. We actually sat on it for probably over a year before it actually came out.
Because
everybody's studio schedules and touring schedules were, you know, it's hard to align all five of us to actually get a tour together. And then we did get a tour together to put the record out, and then COVID happened.
Yeah.
So it didn't happen anyway. But, you know, it's cool. I mean, we definitely want to be more active on this record and tour more. And I was excited that we had an opportunity to do it. So we did have a release lined up around it. But hopefully we'll be able to reschedule everything once the world gets back to some kind of normal, you know?
Yeah. Did you produce the album?
I did, yeah. My other guitarist, Greg, who's also a record producer out of Connecticut, worked on a little bit, but we did it all at my studio, and I wound up producing it and mixing it and everything.
Is it difficult for you to work on your own bands as a producer? Do you get like heavy into the minutia and end up spending way more time on it?
It used to be, I think, a little more. In the past, I would sort of feel more pressure when I was doing my own stuff because I thought I would be like maybe judged harsher for it or something.
Yeah.
Because it's my band and production. But no, in the past few years, I've kind of just realized that if I'm writing music or recording music for myself, I'm just going to do whatever I want at this point. Because it's supposed to be an outlet for me, and it's supposed to be fun. And I don't really care if people like it. It's selfishly for me. I'm glad people like it. But if you thought it sucked, it would be totally fine, too.
Word, man. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time today. I know you're a busy dude, so I just have a couple more questions for you. Growing up, I mean, obviously you probably were super influenced by hardcore metal, and I'm sure there's all kinds of different influences in there as well. If you could, and I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but if you could pick four albums that have made like a direct and like positive impact on your life.
Ooh, four albums. Okay. I'll go with Pennywise, A Bad Time.
Okay, nice.
Hatebreed, Satisfaction is a Death of Desire.
That's a blueprint, man.
Yeah. A couple more. What do we got? Okay, a little bit. Gojira, The Way of All Flesh. About 10 years old now, but
so heavy.
That record really, really got me inspired to do take my metal band in a certain way, and that one was a big one. Any one more? Jane Doe, Converge.
Yeah,
that was the for the artsier side of hardcore, that was kind of that blew it open for me a little bit. And I think kind of brought in some of my taste and interest in music, you know, at a younger age. So there's four. There's probably more. There's so many more, but that's the first four.
Nice, dude. So you're from New Jersey. Did you grow up going to some pretty gnarly hardcore shows?
I did. I did very well. I did a lot.
Did you get smashed in the face at like E-Town and Fury of Five shows?
Yeah. I think one of the first shows I went to was a Fury of Five show in Marysbury Park, and I did not know what that was at the time. And then I experienced, and then it happened to me.
And you get windmilled, so, and you're like, no.
Yeah, shows aren't what they, well, shows aren't anything right now, but the modern day hardcore show is not what it used to be.
Right.
those shows in the 90s in New Jersey were definitely something to see. It was a different time.
Well, I guess going along with that, my final question for you, if you could pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got that scar.
Scar on my body. Well, my biggest one is I have a giant one on the top of my head.
Okay.
Because I fell down a flight of stairs like an idiot.
Jesus.
I slipped in the rain, and I need 57 staples across the top of my head.
Holy.
Yeah, if I shaved my head, I'd look like a crate. I'd look insane. But yeah, that didn't feel good. I had to get, I don't know if you know how medical staples work, but imagine a staple gun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's what it is. So you just get you just get stapled for a while. So that sucked and it leaves a big scar. But
holy,
it was in the middle of producing a record too, so it presented some challenges at the time. But
what album?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was this band, The Human Abstract.
Oh, I know them. Yeah. Anymore. I remember them.
Yeah, we were doing, I think it's called Digital Veil, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And it was just the middle of the day making that record, and it happened. And
holy crap.
Yeah, I felt bad because those guys, you know, at the time I hadn't really made a lot of records for, like, label bands, and they had traveled from California and
uh-huh.
stuff. And I didn't want to send them home or anything, so I kind of worked through that. I think I only missed a day of work, and then just got back to it. I remember, like, having to record vocals with earbuds because I couldn't put headphones over my head, and it was a disaster. But it came out cool. We got it done. So,
well, did you have, like, a gnarly concussion and stuff, too?
I don't remember if I had a concussion. I know I passed out at one point.
Jesus Christ.
They did a bunch of scans on me. I'm fine. Nothing, luckily, nothing long-term or you know.
It just looks crazy.
Permanent happened. Just a crazy scar, yeah. But that's a good one. It's a good
nice.
Scar.
All right, man. Right on. Well, thanks a lot, man. Will Putney from End, from Fit for an Autopsy. And what's the name of your studio?
Graphic Nature.
Graphic Nature Studio. You can check out tons of his albums. He has a very large Wikipedia with all the records that he's worked on. You can definitely check that out. And actually, that's a good question. Is Wikipedia right with all your stuff? Have you ever looked at your Wikipedia and you're like, nah, that's wrong?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. Let's go have a look. I'm gonna guess it's probably close, but probably missing a few. I don't even know who updates Wikipedia. I think we tried to find this out at one point.
It's the deep state. That's they do it.
Yeah. It kind of stopped updating. I don't know. It's missing about 100 records. But
Jesus,
if you want to see what I do, just follow me on the old social media. I always keep it updated.
There you go, man. And again, the new record is all called "Splinters from an Ever-Changing Face." Available on Closed Casket Records. Do you have any final words for the Northwest audience before we let you go?
Hopefully, we can get out there on tour soon. Looking forward to playing over there. And
yeah.
Everyone who's checked out any of the records I've done or listen to any of my band, I always appreciate the support. It's very humbling to be able to have a career making music that you love. So I never take that for granted. And, you know, the people who listen to these records and buy these records are the reason I exist. So thank you.
Absolutely, man. And have a good one and stay safe and stay sane, man.
Awesome, man. You too. I appreciate it.
Yep. Have a good one, Will.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what?
Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.